This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com.
Welcome to the Toastmasters Podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. This is Greg Gazin.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
Ryan, you'd probably agree that it makes sense that a good trainer needs to be a good speaker. That is, possess a number of the same skills. But to truly be effective as a trainer, he or she needs a little more than that. And today's guest will tell us how. Ryan, who are we speaking with today?
Today's guest is distinguished Toastmaster Gavin Meikle. Gavin has been training in communication and interpersonal skills for more than 25 years and has been a Toastmaster since 2005. He's a member of two clubs in England, Solent Speakers in Fareham and Spinnaker Speakers in Portsmouth. He's the author of The Presenter's Edge, How to Unlock Your Inner Speaker. Gavin has led multiple Toastmasters workshops at the club area, division, and district level. Gavin Meikle, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Welcome.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. It's a pleasure to be here.
Gavin, as I was preparing for this interview, I was thinking back to the number of speakers I've listened to over the past few years. It seems that the one-to-many approach is becoming less common than it used to be. There seems to be a lot more interaction in presentation. So, for example, I've been asked to come in and talk about, let's say, public speaking or entrepreneurship to a group. These presentations seem to be becoming more like a dialogue than a typical scripted speech that you would do in a keynote. How would you differentiate an interactive presentation from what you would call training?
Oh, that's a great question. It's like anything. We sort of polarize things and we say this is training, this is speaking, whereas really they're all part of a continuum, if you like. They blend into each other. More and more nowadays, I think so the speakers that really engage an audience and get them thinking understand that as human beings, we like to participate. So by making your speech interactive through either questions and the audience actually verbally participating, or what I call silent interaction, where you're asking rhetorical questions, a good speaking tip, that makes the audience think. So they're doing something silent. They're, you know, processing, they're considering your question and how that relates to their experience, whether they agree or disagree and so on. That really gets the brain cells working. And I think it makes your messages much more, to quote a phrase, sticky, when we can relate the content we're receiving to our own existing experience. We build more links in our brain, and that's going to be a good thing from a training point of view and a learning point of view.
Interesting.
I like that concept of presenting and training being on a continuum. I wonder if you could share a bit about how your mindset would be different if you are leaning more towards the presenting side of the continuum versus the training end of the continuum.
I think with the presenting side of things, you're focusing a lot on yourself and your content and your knowledge. What do you want to get across to your audience? You know, you're still going to think, who are the audience and what are their issues? What's their existing knowledge? But it's all about your content. You have control of that. You have control of the whole thing. When you're moving to a more interactive side of things, you've got to be willing to let go of control a little bit because you don't know how the audience are going to respond. You can guess what it might be. You can make some assumptions. But in reality, all sorts of interesting reactions can come from the audience. And you've got to be okay with that. It brings a greater depth to the speaking experience because you don't just have a dialogue, a prepared speech with a set of points that you're going to deliver in a set time scale. You've got that challenge of how do you adjust it on the fly based on the reactions and responses you're getting from your audience.
Gavin, along those lines of being prepared for the unexpected and adjusting on the fly, we all know when you get a group of humans together and have them talking, you got to be prepared for anything. Your article brings up that sometimes tensions can arise in a training session. I read that your advice to the trainer is to listen and be authentic in your response. I'd like to probe just a little bit more, because my first thought was, gosh, what if I authentically feel, hey, buddy, you just need to get off it. You're acting like a jerk and dragging the rest of the group down. I'm sure you wouldn't advise me to say it that way, but can you say a little bit more about what it means to respond authentically?
We know as speakers, and we're taught, be authentic, talk about what you really believe in and express yourself, but at the same time, being diplomatic and thinking about how best to phrase it so that the message that you're trying to convey gets across. And I think if there is somebody who's hogging the conversation or asking a load of challenging questions, being able to thank them for that, and then rather than criticize them, try and close them down and shift the focus maybe to somebody else in the group. If somebody is being consistently difficult, usually I will try and take that offline. And if we're having a break, to be able to take that person to one side and say, look, I really appreciate your contribution. I can understand that you've got a lot to say and that you're either agreeing or you're disagreeing. However, it's not just about your experience. It's about the experience of the whole group. And I'd love it if we could kind of work together, if you could help me by just staying silent for a little bit and allowing some of the other people to contribute. I'm not criticizing them. I'm just picking up on the behavior and trying to sell the idea to them that actually they would help everybody in the group to learn more by being a little bit either more succinct or just shutting it for a little bit.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Rather than making them wrong, you're enrolling them to help you contribute to the group. That's great.
Yeah, it's really diffusing the issue. Although, depending on the audience, you may have someone in the audience that might just pipe up and shut them down.
That's true. Well, before you have to. They can self-police sometimes, can't they?
I do remember one time years ago when I was speaking to a group of doctors on communication skills, right at the beginning, just after I was introduced and just about to start, one of the audience said, well, I don't know why we're here anyway, because we're all doctors. You know, we know how to communicate. And I was just pausing for a few seconds about to say, how do I break the news to him that actually if he was to speak to his patients, he might find that he's not quite as good a communicator as he thinks he is, when I think two or three other of his colleagues basically said what I was going to say, well, would your patients have said the same thing about you? So it was great that, you know, some people have more awareness than others.
Gavin, I've attended many training sessions and, of course, also delivered a number of sessions both inside and outside of Toastmasters, and trying to think back to the ones that I've enjoyed. Now, obviously, the number one reason to be there is for education, to learn, but the ones that I loved, that I went away feeling really good about, those are the ones that I found were fun. They were upbeat. Chances are everybody got involved, and truthfully, sometimes they're done even before you realize it. You go, oh, we're done already? Oh, I was just having fun. Obviously, you have a lot of experience. If you could perhaps dig into your bag of tricks, what are some of the do's and the don'ts, some of the actions or activities, maybe your favorite go-to exercises to help people come away with the best training experience?
I think the first tip I would say before you even start is being clear about what your intention is, that you have a clear outcome for the session. It's not necessarily my outcome. It's what outcome do I have for the participants? What do I want them to be able to be doing or thinking or feeling differently at the end of the session? The reason I say that is because I think our brain is incredible, much more than a computer. It's very creative. And if it knows where it's taking us, where it's get to, it can come up with ideas spontaneously to solve problems or to explain something in a different way or to come up with an activity to highlight a point. But your brain needs to know where you want it to get to with the audience, first of all. My favorite things are really activities to get the audience talking. In the article I mentioned, buzz groups, for instance, which are splitting the group down into smaller subunits and giving them a question or a scenario to discuss. It's wonderful in Toastmasters training to sometimes split off the different officers into different groups and get them to compare notes about their challenges, or to talk about, well, what happens if you've got a member who is maybe getting disaffected or is not participating as much in the club as it used to. How could you handle that? What have you done? What do you do? And then get them to report back to their peers. Those sort of activities work really well, and they're quite stimulating. Sometimes quizzes are a good way of assessing knowledge, either pre or post the session. Role plays, some people hate the word role play. One of my mentors used to say, there's no such thing as role play. What you're doing is rehearsal, because you're not trying to be somebody else. You're being yourself, playing a character, if you like, and you're responding as you would if you were in their shoes. And I think practicing some of those skills, whether it's recruiting a new member or it's dealing with a problem situation, maybe it's one of your committee who's not pulling their weight. Those are difficult conversations, but actually being able to practice them in a safe space within the training environment starts to build the skills and the language and the vocabulary that when you have to face those situations in real life, you've got something to work with to start with. The other one I love that's really powerful is sometimes called forum theatre, where you get two people, maybe two slightly experienced people, sitting in the middle of the room, or ideally inside a circle, who are going to role play a situation that everybody in the room might have to deal with. So they deal with it, and everybody else in the audience is listening. And after a few minutes, you pause it, and then you go to the audience and say, okay, how are they doing? What did you like about it? What didn't you like about it? What could they do differently? Get suggestions from the audience, and then ask the role players to replay that situation using some of the suggestions and feedback from the group. That can be very entertaining, and it can be very enlightening. And it takes the pressure off some of the more inexperienced people who couldn't do the role play, but who can contribute and see the impact of their input.
Those are great examples. I'm even thinking with online training, the buzz groups would work really, really, really well.
Yeah, and the facility of breakout rooms and things nowadays, being able to do that, really powerful.
Is there one little faux pas or something specific that you could highlight that this is something that it's probably not a good idea to do?
The most obvious one, and the one that certainly drives me nuts when I go to any form of training, is the monologue. It's somebody with a set of slides who's been given a set of slides. They may not have read the slides fully. They may not be that experienced in the area they're even speaking on, but they've either volunteered or been volunteered to run a session on something. They're just reading a script. Anybody who speaks like that, they're not going to be really engaged, they're not going to be entertaining, and the audience are just going to switch off. But it's so easy to do. You think, oh, it's a training session, I've got a script, I'll just read the script. And you need to do all the things you do as a trainer to bring that script to life and to add your own anecdotes and stories and the vocal variety and the engagement and the rhetorical questions and all those things to bring that script to life.
Nice.
As a trainer who's preparing new material that they haven't delivered before, how do you know if you've crossed the threshold of being sufficiently prepared and having that deep understanding that you need to really give your audience the optimal training experience?
There are some things I think that we're asked to train on, and they've been something that we've been passionate about for maybe a number of years. And you've read around it and you've researched it and you know the background, and it's the challenge is how do you, you know, which bits do you pick and choose to put into a limited time training session? You kind of know that you've got the background information there. But if you're preparing something, as quite often happens with new trainers particularly, they sometimes don't know how much they know. And again, if you're given a script or a manual by somebody else saying, these are the points you need to cover, I think rather than just reading it out, you need to think, what does this actually mean? Maybe discuss it with somebody else, one of your colleagues or a more experienced Toastmaster, so that you deepen your understanding and so you can talk about it conversationally. And if you can do that, then I think you know that you've got enough depth of knowledge to be able to handle that type of audience.
That was really good. That was a tough question, and you addressed it really well, by the way.
Thank you.
Gavin, so far you've given us a lot of really great information to help people become better trainers, etc. So Gavin, let's switch gears and talk a little bit about you. We want to find out a bit more about you. In the article, you make a point of stating that when you began your career, you never expected to be a professional communication skills trainer. What was it that you aspired to be, or what direction did you take, and what was it that changed the path you were on to bring you to where you are today?
I could speak for a long time on this, but I'll try and keep it as succinct as I can. I was a scientist by training. I was good at science at school. I went to university and did a degree in chemistry. And at that tender age, it was like, well, I'll go and become a lab rat in some kind of industrial process or something. When I was still a student, I saw there was a summer job advertised for an international chemicals company. And it said they're looking for chemists and engineers for this 6-week summer job. And I thought, well, that would be good. And it's something relevant to my future career. And I turned up at the interview and there were two guys in suits who said, oh, hi, Gavin, nice to meet you. So you're interested in marketing? And I sort of looked at them blankly and said, what's marketing? I mean, I knew a little bit about marketing, but I'd never done any business studies or anything like that. I'd done pure sciences. To cut a long story short, we had a really interesting conversation. At the end of it, I got the placement. I went and spent 6 months down in this neck of the woods, actually. I was up in Scotland at that time. Thought this is much more interesting. I'd suddenly realized that I'm a people person, and going out and meeting people and talking to them, and that human interaction sort of fired me up compared with sitting in a lab. Then I got into sales. I moved from industrial chemicals into pharmaceuticals and became a pharmaceutical sales rep. What fascinated me was dealing with people. I was seeing customers, and we were given a kind of, not a script, but we were given a kind of flow for our sales pitches. And it would work with some people and it wouldn't work with other people. And I said to my boss, well, why is this? And he said, oh, it's just a numbers game. Some people will like you, some people won't. The more people you see, you know, the more sales you'll get, basically. And I kept thinking, well, that doesn't sound like a very efficient process. And I got interested. Well, what if I could adjust my style to suit the client more? And I started to study and read books about communication skills and NLP, psychology and influence. And I used to use my customers as guinea pigs. I'd try different approaches because I'd see them on a regular basis. Then it suddenly dawned on me one day that the most common reason for all the issues that were happening in the businesses I'd been involved with, the root cause of them seemed to be communication or a lack of it. And that, again, fed into this process and this curiosity about communication. And it's just gone from strength to strength ever since.
Wow. You know what I love about that, Gavin? There's this concept of some of the greatest inventions and discoveries have resulted from accidents that happened in the laboratory. And that's kind of what happened with you. Not that it was an accident so much, but it was a surprise, you know, just as you're absolutely going about your career, like, wow, this is on the radar now. I guess this is what I'm going to do.
Yeah. I mean, I had no idea that career existed, you know, back then. I mean, I don't know about in the States, but in the UK, careers guidance at school and at university was pretty rudimentary. I remember doing a test that was supposed to predict. I filled in these questions and it came back and told me that I should be a merchant banker, which is the most unlikely career you could ever imagine for me, I think, anyway.
Wow. Your comments before, I was thinking automatically, now I know why you do not like scripts.
Gavin, at what point on your journey did Toastmasters come on the radar for you?
When I went self-employed, really. I decided I had enough of the corporate world and wanted to break out on my own. I'd seen lots of training. I mean, I was very lucky in that industry to get lots of training. Some of it was absolutely exceptional. Some of it was pretty mediocre. And like a lot of trainers, I probably thought, well, I could do that. I could do that better than they could. So I'd set up my own business. And then it suddenly dawned on me that whilst I was quite a confident speaker and I was getting great reviews from my customers, that feedback was more about the overall content of the course. And I wasn't getting specific feedback about the way I delivered it. And I thought, well, there's a chance here that I will get sloppy over time. You know what it's like? We all pick up bad habits. It's like driving. I sometimes say to my students, you know, if I told you I've got a set of driving testers outside the room and you're all going to retake your driving tests, how confident would you feel? And it's not because you're a bad driver, it's because you've picked up some bad habits along the way. I was looking for something to help me hone my skills to stop me from falling into bad habits. And I heard about this organization called Toastmasters, and I thought, that sounds perfect. It's been a godsend. I've been in Toastmasters about 16 years or thereabouts.
So clearly, your Toastmasters training has made you a better trainer. I'm also curious, though, how has your training experience made you a better speaker?
If you'd asked me that 7 or 8 years ago, I would have really struggled. But it's really become clear in the last few years that what being a trainer has done is it changes the way I approach writing a speech and delivering a speech in that it's all about the audience. I think a lot of speakers, particularly when they're starting out, it's about me and I'm the center of attention and what I'm going to say. Whereas what drives it for me is the audience, is who are they, where are they at, where am I trying to, what impact am I trying to have on them? And then crafting a speech that takes them on a journey from where they are now or where I think they are now to where I would like them to be. And that seemed just absolutely natural to me. And then when I started to speak to some less experienced people or even some more experienced people who just did speaking, I saw there was this difference in terms of the focus. And that, I think, has been the biggest change for me. Because I'm a trainer, I just naturally approach it in that way. It's all about the audience. And when I think structure, it's about what am I going to put in it? What examples? The storytelling and things like that. I think little case studies and little nuggets help bring an abstract concept to mind. I see some speakers who will describe or talk about an abstract process or a model for something. And that's fine, but you know what it's like sometimes you're struggling and going, yeah, but what does that actually mean in reality? And then they give an example, they tell a little story about somebody or a particular case study. And suddenly you go, I get it. I saw it in my own club just the other night. There was a guy talking about a new type of artificial intelligence technology. And I was struggling to understand what he meant until he told a story about a particular application from it. And I suddenly went, got it.
It's actually quite interesting. It sounds to me that you really take it to heart. And it seems that as opposed to a platform speaker, with training, you're getting that constant feedback. And by getting that constant feedback, you have the ability to really better gauge your audience, to get a better understanding of your audience. It seems that you continue to do that.
Absolutely. Sometimes people say, well, presentations are a one-way process and training is two-way. And I think, well, I disagree with you because I think every presentation is a conversation between you and the audience. And it's a two-way conversation. They may not be saying anything verbally, but they're reacting, they're responding, particularly when we're in person and we can see them nodding or frowning. The right mindset will adapt to that and respond to that. Maybe we think, oh, I've seen some frowns there, or I've seen some shaking heads. I need to stop and question, well, why is that? Is it a misunderstanding? Is there a disagreement? Because I want the communication to be clear. I want the messages to be understood in the way that I mean them. When you think about it, communication is such a challenging thing in reality. We, as human beings, we take it for granted, I think. My favourite quote is George Bernard Shaw, the Irish playwright, who said that the most dangerous thing about communication is the illusion that it has taken place. And, it's so true. We communicate with somebody, we say something, but how many times do they go off and do something different? The temptation is to point the finger at them and say, well, they weren't listening. But actually, did I explain it clearly? Did I check the understanding? And I think as a trainer, that's doubly important because you're trying to influence people's behavior. And therefore, you may not see them again at all, or you may not see them for several months. So you need to build in the time to be able to check that understand their understanding. And if there is a misunderstanding, to be able to correct that.
For the folks listening, this is pure gold. And the beauty of today's technology is that you can listen to it again. And in fact, if you enjoyed this episode and you found value in it, please, please, please share this episode with many people. Again, you can find the Toastmasters podcast at toastmasterspodcast.com, toastmasters.org, Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, and your favorite outlet.
I also want to let our listeners know, while we've covered a lot of ground here today, there are lots more tips and ideas in Gavin's article. It's in the November 2021 issue of the Toastmaster, From Toastmaster to Trainer. And Gavin, before we let you go, would you like to say a word about your book?
I can't miss an opportunity, can I? Yeah, I wrote this book about 6 or 7 years ago now, the first iteration of it, and I've updated it a couple of times since. What I wanted to do is make it a bite-sized book, something that people could dip into, that they could read quickly and get to the nuggets of information. But I wanted to put in just little anecdotes and little stories from my experience that hopefully bring those principles to life and that people can see how to apply them. Because nothing changes unless you apply the new knowledge. And sometimes helping to get those little case studies or examples help people to see where they could use these techniques. So that's what it is. It's a bite-sized book. You can probably read it in a couple of hours. It's a nice book to dip in and out of, covering all the kind of key aspects of writing speeches and delivering speeches and a little bit about PowerPoint and so on.
Sounds amazing. And what's the best way for listeners to follow you or get in touch with you?
You can get in touch with me by email through gavin@inter-active.co.uk. Or you can look up my name on Facebook or LinkedIn. I've got a profile there. I'm more than happy to chat. I've got a blog on my website, which is www.inter-active.co.uk. Again, without the e.co.uk. And you can find the book on the usual commercial platforms in Kindle and paperback format.
And we'll certainly put that in the show notes.
Gavin Meikle, thanks so much for joining us on the Toastmasters podcast today. This has been great.
That's been an absolute pleasure, guys. I've thoroughly enjoyed talking to you both.
Thanks, Gavin.
Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.